Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Women took the word. That probably the reason why it naturally happened is because it came from misogynist hip hop. And women listened to the music, loved the music, didn't really set well with them. And they said, just like the word, we own this word now.
On today's podcast, we have Too Short. You can fast forward. I know. I get it. But come right back because you do not want to miss it.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags to riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everybody, this is Carrie Champion, and I'm here to announce that the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards on April 27th. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with your Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit. Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event you want to be at. You don't want to miss it because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have black ownership. This program gives black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training, and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million black businesses initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
Carry champions to be a champion, a champion and carry champion and carry champion, a champion and carry champion and carry champion. Greatest in sports and entertainment, connected with. In a world where vulnerable considered weak, come and remove the veil from entertainment's elite. It's the difference between what is real and what the public sees. So here's your favorite celebrities behind the scenes. It's refreshing, authentic, the whole story, specific. Life-altering events that shape the person that you hear. We got a champion and carry champion. Hey girl, you did it. It's the greatest in sports and entertainment, connected with us. Every champion and carry champions to be a champion. A champion and carry champion. Hey girl, you did it. Got a champion and carry champion and carry champion. Greatest in sports and entertainment, connected with us.
All right, folks, welcome back to Naked. I appreciate you for joining me. I'm pretty sure we got a lot of people from the Bay tuning in because Two Shorts on the podcast today. He gets into a lot of things. But before I talk about the secrets that you're about to hear, you know, the lifelong hip hop stories that folks want to know about, I got to give you some news and notes. And that means Dwayne's going to play this music. Da-da-da-da. Okay, so guys, we're talking about Brittany Griner, and I got to keep it a buck. I'm frustrated. I was on CNN this week, and we knew that the trial was coming up on Thursday, and we knew that more than likely Brittany Griner would plead guilty. So let me explain to you all why she pled guilty to the charges. It was because she's in Russia. Their conviction rate is 99%. Less than 1% of the people charged with crimes are found innocent. And what we have been told is that their justice system isn't like our justice system. If she would have pled not guilty, it was a sign of disrespect. And perhaps they could have given her a longer sentence because they thought she came to their country and she lied to them. It is a lot of ethics as it is here, but a different ethical system. So what I was told was that the philosophy was, if in fact she pled guilty, perhaps the sentence would not be as harsh. And then if in fact there was a trade, a prisoner swap, which you all have been reading about, that Putin, the president of Russia, would be able to pardon Brittany Griner, the WNBA star, along with the other Americans that have been wrongfully detained, or at least classified as wrongfully detained, in exchange for a true war criminal that we have here in the United States. So it works this way. Plead guilty because they will take mercy on you. And if in fact the president has said, President Biden has said he is working on getting her home because she and several other Americans are wrongfully detained, perhaps Putin will say, all right, to my country here in Russia, it looks like I was generous enough to give you all a pardon. Because, again, she's convicted. She lied. She is a criminal. Not so much that she lied, but he just wants to look like, yeah, I'm in power. I decided to free this American along with these other Americans in exchange for somebody we really value, a true war criminal that's been here for 20 plus years, from my understanding. Now, this is so deep in the weeds, and people are like, why in the world did she plead guilty? Why in the world is she not back home yet? Well, there are a couple of things. And this is when I said on CNN, we have to say the quiet part out loud. She's black. She's a lesbian. She's a woman. And quite frankly, no one cared. No one truly cared until her wife and along with a few other people that I know of and have heard of decided to make a lot of noise, decided to take this philosophy of not speaking about WNBA star Brittany Griner in a Russian detention center. And say, guess what? We are going to speak about it. Because if we don't, we need to put more pressure on the president, on our government, to pay attention to who she is, and perhaps you can bring her home. I believe the final straw was the letter that Brittany Griner wrote. She wrote a letter that was delivered to President Biden that essentially, she's like, look, I'm a human. My dad was in Vietnam. I voted for you. I, along with these other Americans, are detained. I am someone's daughter. I am someone's wife. I matter too. Please see me as a human, because if you don't see me as a human, I can't come home. And I was asked on one of the shows, well, you know, her coach, Brittany Griner's coach here in the States, said if it were LeBron or if it was Tom Brady, they'd be home. And I remember the lady, you know, who interviewed me said, is that really true? And I said, well, look, it's a false equivalent, because Tom Brady or LeBron James wouldn't have to go make money overseas to make ends meet. And some of you are like, whatever, she broke the law. She decided to go over there. She should have known we were in war. What's wrong with her? She did this. She did that. She's wrong. I get all of that. And yes, if you are the righteous police, sure, there are a lot of things that went wrong. Sure, there are a lot of things that she probably could have done differently. But I will tell you this, there are circumstances that you and I both don't know. And if, in fact, it was your mother, your sister, your cousin, your close friend, your best friend, your coworker, your colleague, if you will, you want them home, no? Yes, you would want them home. You wouldn't be like, they got you. So you got to spend 10 years for having that vape pen over there, huh? 10 years in prison. They won't give you a cool decade for a vape pen. Yeah, you should have known the law. I feel as if there's a lot of things happening there that we just don't know about. But the right thing to do is to bring her home. Just like the right thing to do is for us to give millions and millions, if not now billions of dollars in aid to Ukraine, right? I don't hear y'all saying, why are we giving them money? That's our time. And of course you're thinking that, but we're not making a huge fuss about it. It's the right thing to do. And the right thing to do is bring Brittany Griner home. And if you're listening to this, I need you guys to be aware and activated as I use every week, and make sure you talk to people about it. Okay? Let's bring her home along with the other Americans that are wrongfully detained there. It's the right thing to do, damn it. It's the right thing to do. End of my rant and news and notes. Da-da-da-da-da-da. All right, on to today's guest. So I have a funny story about today's guest. I think about 3 years ago, I reached out to him, asked him if he could perform at a house party that I was going to have. I wanted him to perform just on my birthday a few years back. And I said, if not 2 years back, I want you to perform. He said, okay, I will. I'll do some of the classics. I'll do some of the favorites. And it never came through because I ended up going to out of the country or something, and just real hood with it, didn't even follow through. But he was gracious enough to come on my podcast. Thank you so much. I will return the favor. And it's too short, y'all. And so here's the funny thing about what we discussed. If you are not from California, you don't know the difference between Northern California versus Southern California. And I've talked about it before when I had E40 on the podcast. And so, of course, we got into the differences between Northern California and Southern California. I asked him what he thought about the Super Bowl. Was he shocked that Ice Cube didn't participate? I heard it was because of the vaccine and he's not vaccinated, but I feel like there could have been more to it. I also asked him some of his greats, who are the icons, if you will. And believe it or not, and I shouldn't even be saying this, and I'm only going to use it once. Too Short made it okay for me anyway to hear the word every 5 seconds in a rap song. Well, it wasn't just Too Short, but when he says it, it's like with a certain flair, and you be ready and you be like, biatch. This is not so friendly for young children, but you know what I'm saying. Sit back, relax, enjoy Too Short on Naked. So first off, how have you been? What's going on? I've been seeing you at the, I mean, you've been at the games, representing, performing the whole nine. That was a moment for me. I'm
just active. Like, you know, it's this thing called hip hop, and hip hop has all these little boxes they try to put you in, and hip hop just keeps breaking out the boxes, and nobody's allowed to tell it what to do. So I'm just putting in another chapter of how long can one go? How long can you do this?
Wow. And by the way, You are a perfect example of musicians often reinvent themselves. Only the great ones do it. I think Madonna used to do it a lot for a long time. I would see her reinvent herself. Beyonce does it. Great artists do it. Michael do it. Janet did it. And in terms of what you do, hip hop, they always try to put us in a box. I say us as if I'm a hip hop. But you know what I mean. Like, they try to put us in a box, and we're seeing more mainstream. So a coach called me after you performed for Golden State and said, I remember, he's been in the league 30 years. He's like, I remember a time when that would have never happened. And it was beautiful to see.
Yeah.
Did you understand the monumental moment for you?
Yeah, because, you know, I've been a sports fan my whole life. And as a sports fan, you know firsthand from being in the arena or the stadium, watching TV, there's not a smidgen of hip hop in those 80s and 90s that was just seeping through. It just wasn't there. And it was amongst all of the players, football and basketball mainly, in that culture. They brought it to work with them. They put their headphones on. They worked out to it. But the powers that be would not allow the music to come in. But, you know, the other side of that is now a lot of the teams, at least the ones that I'm affiliated with, have entertainment departments that are reaching out to hip hop artists. And they are making sure that the dancers, you know, hip hop is a part of it. It's the hottest thing. You got to do it. The songs are playing in the stadium. Even the cutaway songs are now, they're giving like up and coming producers like action that you're sitting there watching the playoffs and your beat comes on. You're like, that's my beat. And it's like,
yeah,
it's a lot of that going on. So I feel it. It would have been dope if that soundtrack was in the background when Allen Iverson was playing. Would have been dope. It was supposed to be.
And we, you know what we're seeing too? Now that corporate, mainstream, whatever, as they always do, adopt the culture, the hip hop culture, because that's where it starts, they're using it more in documentaries, right? We saw how at the Super Bowl, for instance, that performance got a lot of pushback, but it was such a celebration of hip hop. What was your take on it just from a performance standpoint?
Well, I mean, it was genius. The set was genius to maximize each artist and capture the essence of Dr. Dre all at the same time, to be a part of, you know, the hometown guy is performing in front of the hometown crowd. The almost never happened home team plays in the Super Bowl in their stadium. That only happened twice that I know of. And the time before that was the year before that.
Yeah, at Tampa. Mm-hmm.
So it was just all amazing. I really think that, you know, Dre thought it out. Dre's a perfectionist. So, you know, but, you know, you look at it like this. You could say, man, they're finally catching on. You could say that. But you could also say, we're so relentless that you shut the door on us for so many years, so many times, and we're still coming. And the genre is still growing. And you just, like, hip hop is the reason why hip hop is on the platforms now. Not because the platforms got wise. It's because hip hop just keeps growing. So we forced it on them. When they should have got onto it, when they should have used hip hop in mainstream advertising, marketing, whatever. They should have been doing it in the 90s. The early 2000s. To now, just now get on. This is a whole kind of different version of hip hop. You missed a whole other love that millions of people love. You missed all of that Tribe Called Quest and you know, things from the Midwest and the East. Like, you missed a whole thing. And now this is a whole new hip hop. It's fun. It's you know, but it's still love. The love for the genre.
I never thought I would have to explain who Tribe Called Quest is, or who, to me, it's just like, if you're an artist, and a hip hop artist specifically, you should know the greats. You should know Too Short. You should know E-40. You should know. I mean, it's interesting that you said it's two different forms of hip hop. What was it prior to, and when did you see it changing as it has evolved?
I say it's two different kind of hip hop universes because of the generations. And there's a If you say, well, I grew up on Too Shorty, 40, you know, 90s, all that stuff. There's a hip hop before that, too. It was a whole 80s vibe that before we reached our so-called golden era of hip hop, the late 80s on into the 90s, there was a whole nother world of hip hop that had a whole different vibe. It was a whole, you know, the five boroughs in New York and the breakdancing and, you know, the DJs and the spray paint cans and battles and dance battles and stuff. You remember that hip hop? So
yeah, but do you think it's changed? Do you think that the essence of what it began isn't still that same essence?
For one, it's evolving as it should. And for two, it's growing. It grows. Each time the next batch of rappers gets more money. The guys before me, I came in the late 80s. The guys before me did not tour arenas and have platinum albums. You know, that Run DMC, LL Cool J, they kicked that door open. And Public Enemy, Tribe Called Quest, Too Short, that era, Boogie Down Productions, E-40, we all, you know, NWA, we all benefited off the Run DMC, LL Cool J door opening up, you know, Run DMC showing you that we have millions of fans. And then, you know, guys like Steve Stout going into corporate America and saying, you better use these guys to sell some products. But it's been a long, hard fight. Now, you could get popular and the companies will come looking for you to be there, endorse their products. But they didn't want to have anything to do with us. We were like limited to like malt liquor beer back in the day.
Correct. You said Run DMC opened the door. Run DMC, LL Cool J, Kumo D opened the door for you. Who did Too Short and E-40 open the door for?
I mean, literally the entire Bay Area independent music scene. That independent spirit is funny because where I got it from was it came from necessity. And E-40 got it from the same place, not very shortly after me. Like, we're from the Bay. If you wanted to find a company, a music company, entertainment company that would pay attention to you and then invest in you, you had to go to Los Angeles or to New York. That's the only place those companies were at. So out of necessity, E-40, in his own world, he didn't call me and ask me how to do it. He had the same desire to be heard and to make money off his music, and he figured it out. I was in the same position. I figured it out. Like, I'm not going to go to New York and get signed. I'm not going down to L.A. and asking Motown to sign me. They don't have any rappers on their label. You know what I'm saying? It was a dream that didn't seem attainable, so independence was the only way. And as soon as we went independent, the music was already popular from what we were doing in the streets. As soon as we made a legitimate independent music hustle with our own self-owned companies, it just made a lot of money immediately. And that set off a sort of an arrogance in the Bay, because you're looking at your hometown guys and they're doing really big things and they're doing it on their own terms. And that means that now everybody goes, I saw 40's formula. I saw Too Short's formula. I'm about to do the same. I'm going to go to the same guys they put this through, and then I'm going to get my value up. And then when the majors come at me, they're going to have to pay me big. You know what I mean? So in a lot of our cases, when we, by the time we got discovered by the mainstream, we were already making a lot of money. We were, you know, you go in there and you making $5 for every cassette tape you sell back in the day. And you got thousands on top of thousands on top of thousands of people purchasing those, and that money goes straight to you. Once you get into the system, you know, if you got to go around with your demo asking people to sign you, you're going to get like a real low end kind of acceptance, a not so good deal. But if you go in there and you already the master of your profession and you know, selling units, and you're like, bro, I don't really need the money you offer me. What you offering? You get a better deal, you know? So that's what we gave the game. We gave it the independent hustle from the Bay, and it still lives to this day.
So the independent hustle came from the Bay, and you gave the game to others. They saw how you did it and they replicated it. So not only is it, I would say, just outside looking in, you also, which is still so odd for me to even say, especially my power to the woman ass, right? You also made it okay for whatever reason to use the word. Now, is it because there is a lyric to it? You know what I mean? It's melodic. You know what how is that okay? Because I love NWA, love Ice Cube. Even when they did it, was disrespectful. It wasn't so disrespectful for
conversations that we had personally. Just
yes,
the few, and we've sat around and talked.
We have.
I did not bring that word into my music in a disrespectful tone. So I can say a very disrespectful line. You can write it down on a piece of paper. But the way I said it in the music, it makes it a little more, you know, either it's funny, because
that's what it was.
If you say it on the right punchline, it makes you laugh. Or it could be sort of enticing, because you got to understand also, this is from, I'm mimicking and like turning entertainment into something that I got from really real life pimp culture. And right. In pimp culture, these words are, not, they don't mean the same thing. There's a totally different meaning. And pimp culture means baby, like my love. It's like the same, that's what it means. It's like a term of endearment. And I'm mimicking this, and I'm making, you know, a lot of, the humor is what made it go by. And I also put it in, it didn't come from me to you. I always go listen to the Too Short songs. I'm always talking to the listener, and we're talking about her. And that makes it easier to digest, is that right when you hear, you go, yeah, he's definitely talking about her, not me. So I give you that option to either play the role or to deflect it and go, I'm feeling what he's saying because they are like that. She is like that, you know? And so you either laugh it off, you deflect it. And then somewhere along the line, I don't think I get credit for this. I think popular culture and, you know, just culture in general. I don't want to put in any word before it, but women, when they started going, let's go with my, you know, and they're like, and you walk up, you like, who's that? That's my, like, and it's the way, the tone. None of those were disrespectful. And women took the word. That probably the reason why it naturally happened is because it came from misogynist hip hop. And women listened to the music, loved the music, didn't really set well with them. And they said, just like the word, we own this word now. Only time you can call me this word is when I say you can. And when, when it's not authorized, you're going to feel the wrath. And it went there. And it just flipped it, you know? And a lot of
white, why don't you give yourself credit for that?
Because I think, and when you talk about the masses and what the music was doing, it was hip hop really took to
general.
And I think that the backlash is happening right now. Female rappers, they are on male rappers and male
every day, all day. I turn it up louder, Meg. Go hard, go Cardi, go. Like Jasmine Sullivan, even the rappers. And it's his soul.
It's just that was the evolution. It had to happen. You can't keep hip hop out that long. You can't keep females out that long. You can't. You know what I'm saying? Hip hop had a policy that said one female at a time goes on the pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
She comes off
the Trina, pedestal. Nikki, yeah, and then they all come in and they're like, yeah.
Once she's off the pedestal, another one goes up. Never can. Right. If we got two, the pedestal's crowded.
And they're like, no, thank you. All of us can thrive. All of us can
win. During this entire time, we've been having MC Lights. We've been having Lauryn Hill. We've been having
Yes.
We've been having
Bart. Right.
It was a same struggle in society. But now it's all that's done.
But I will say, even the type of music where these women are the what I was referring to, and I don't know if you're saying that too. Yes, these female rappers are getting after it, but they're talking just as reckless as y'all talked at one point in time. And it's with intention. And maybe it started with Lil' Kim, maybe before then, right? But my point is that it's very much this empowering anthem that takes away the stigma that says you can call me a hoe. The stigma that says I'm a hoe if I decide to get it how I live, right? Or yes, the word used incessantly in a very endearing way. I still credit you with that. But I'm watching these women And I'm all like, oh, she's like, I want this money. You better give it to me. If you ain't got no money, I ain't trying to hear you. Like back in the day, that's unheard of. You're not allowed to say that because you can't be a gold digger. So everything that we've been listening to with male hip hop and all of the derogatory terms, these women are like, nah, that's right. I mean, all of those things.
Some dope female rapper stood at the table one too many times listening to a song that said, it ain't tricking if you got it. You know,
that's right.
I'm going to buy you this. You're going to do this for me. And she was like, you know what, motherfucker?
Right.
We're going to do this on my terms.
Yeah.
You're going to buy it. But not on that little, you said, this is how it goes. And, you know, Nicki Minaj, you know, she's
Nicki Minaj. But I give it to Little Kim. I feel like Little Kim was doing it before, very inappropriately. And we were like, oh, how dare you?
She's a trailblazer, pioneer, Little Kim, Foxy Brown. They blazed that trail.
Heck yeah.
Of, you know, when we do let a female on, she's got to be sort of regal and she has to be respectable. And they was like, nah.
You know what we have to do? Pay the bills. Press fast forward. Press fast forward. Press fast forward. Back in a moment.
Every champion and carry champions to be a champion. A champion and carry champion and carry champion. A champion and carry champion and carry champion. Greatest in sports and entertainment. Connected work.
Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everybody, this is Carrie Champion, and I'm here to announce that the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards on April 27th. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with your Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event you want to be at. You don't want to miss it because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
Every champion and carry champions to be a champion, a champion and carry champion. Hey girl, you did it. Got a champion and carry champion and carry champion.
Greatest in sports and entertainment, get naked women.
Welcome back, y'all. Too short. I want to go back because you said something, and I want to, by education, because this is for educational purposes only.
Mm-hmm.
This comes from pimp, the pimp culture, the pimp life. My friend was here a moment ago, and she immediately identified you as Pimp Daddy, right?
That's knowing,
I know, but she was just like, he's a true OG pimp. Like, she says that to me all the time. Like, she was like, he's our OG pimp. Whatever that, not in the way that you are. You know what I'm saying?
But it's, so, it's the pimp game. It's from Oakland.
Tell me about that. Tell me about what that means.
Oakland was a city at one time that was like the vice, where you go for your vices. In the Bay, the Bay Area has millions of people. And there are places you go. But then Oakland was that city that people knew. Like, you go there to party. We had clubs that were like fun. And you know, we had right next door to us is the Alameda Naval Base that was right next door to Oakland. Alameda is the city next door to Oakland. We had the Oakland Army Base, which was like West Oakland. It's in Oakland, was. And then right up the street, we had the Travis Air Force Base. So you got all these military guys, you got all these, people from around the city and the suburbs that need to go somewhere to get their vices on, which I don't think I need to name the vices, but it's the things you do when you go out and party, and you know, then you go back to where you're from and act like you didn't do it. You know, people would come to Oakland to get that thing. And this is a story that was told to me by somebody older than me. So You hear you have this demand and you have poverty and you have underprivileged, and then it just becomes, you know, the pimp culture is a thing that thrived in many cities. And it was when you think about it, you try to picture cars with too many accessories, dudes with suits that match the shoes. And every time they talk, the words rhyme. That was an image that was portrayed. But in reality, all you had to do was provide the service. And it wasn't just the vices I talk about. It was not just women. It was anything else you might want to get to have to party and have fun. So a lot of dudes in Oakland, like, it was, if you're my age, I come out of high school in 1984. If you're my age, I'm in high school in the early 80s, and I see this. Anything you've seen in a movie and you looking back and going, them old pimps, look at, I saw that on the streets. And before crack cocaine came into the neighborhoods, and if I can talk like this, a pimp,
you can,
a pimp and a prostitute were very much respected as they looked and what they drove and how they stepped out. And they didn't, it wasn't like, oh, she's some crack hoe, she's dirty. No, it was like, I'm wearing the best clothes and I look good. And it was like a fashion show. And because of all the things I named to you before, it thrived in our area. It thrived. There was a big demand. The entire Bay is coming to you for these vices. And then in the culture, so then you get the guys who, they're really good at it. They're really good at the imaging of it and the marketing of it and the card and matches and the, you know, it's just whatever, all the way down to the, what the girls are wearing and the little things they do just to make it like, you know, it's a show. It's entertainment. Outside of the actual work, it's entertainment. And I just took to that. I'm a little kid. I'm like, I'm out on the streets. We used to go down to watch the show. Like, you're going to play at the park. We're going down to San Pablo and we're going to kick back and watch. We like, we can't get into action because we're not the guys. And the girls, they're like, get out of here, little boy. Like, get on up out of here. But we out there just like watching. And I decided when I started writing music, it just hit me one day. I'll tell you what happened. I heard the song, The Message, Grandmaster Flash and Furious Five, The Message. And The Message gave me a visual of what was going on in New York. I could see New York and I wasn't even there. the song. If you listen right now, you can picture the story. And I said right then, and the first time I heard the song, I said, I'm going to tell the story of Oakland. And that's when I started doing it. And I just started looking at the streets and looking at the people and listening to what they say. And I put it all in songs. And, you know, I tried to balance out what I did. Okay, you're saying these things that are very negative in certain songs. Well, let's do like two or three songs to counter that that are very positive. And let's kind of always have a balance. People don't even know this. Probably like the first four major label albums that I did, when you put the album on, I don't curse. I don't say one curse word until maybe like 30 minutes into each album. The reason that was is because back then it was cassettes. And Born to Mac, Life is Too Short, Short Dogs in the House, Shorty the Pimp, all these albums were designed so that if you play side A, it's clean. If you flip it over and play side B, it becomes extremely explicit. And I've saved many a kid from getting the ass whooping with that, because the kids back in the day were like, my grandma would pop in the room and say, what you listening to? And I just flip the cassette and say, it's Too Short. And it's just, yeah. And people, I thought I heard some cuss. I'm like, nah.
And that, yeah. And back in the day, cursing was unheard of. Now, if you're not cursing, it seems bizarre and odd.
And I figured if I'm going to bring light to this pimp culture and my image is going to be a pimp, I have to personally save myself and out for conversations like this, for when I'm with my auntie and my mother and they saying, the hell is you saying on that song? And then I kind of, I'm like, well, I listen to this song, The Ghetto, auntie. I ain't just make freaky tales. And then she go, oh yeah, okay.
Was that with intention though? When you did it, you said you purposely did it, but the intention behind it rather is probably the question, was so that you appealed to a broader audience, so that you didn't seem disrespectful to women, so that people knew your versatility? What was the intent?
Way more simple than that. It was because I was reporting Oakland to you, and all of that is Oakland. Oakland ain't just a pimp and a hoe. Oakland is every song Too Short ever wrote. Listen to it. That's what the spectrum is. I'm looking at the city like an artist. If an artist whose visual is feeding off a city, you're going to keep seeing that city in that art. Well, as a musical artist, I was feeding off the city. And the music, I feel like I'm a fan of Too Short because I know where the songs came from. Like, I really know that I would be sitting in a room playing dominoes with the homies, and I'm going, I'm kind of recording because they say the funniest shit and the slickest shit and the craziest stories. And when I leave there, I'm probably going to have something in my head that's the foundation of a song, because we laugh so much and it's just real life. Somebody come in and tell you a story about what they just saw down the street, and I'm like, that is a song that really happened. Like, and so many of my songs are stories I heard in Oakland, or things I saw in Oakland, or things I just thought of thinking like, what would be an Oakland scenario? And I just used it. Oakland has been like my muse for music. Like, when I lived in Atlanta, I was in Atlanta, based in Atlanta for almost 15 years. The entire time I was in Atlanta, it was so easy for me to write songs because in my mind, I have all this Oakland that I can refer to. And I'm just thinking, you know, and I go, at the time I was traveling back and forth a lot, but it was just easy because I got a pen and paper in my hand and I got nothing to say.
Yeah.
I just think about Oakland. I could tell you a true story. It's kind of personal, but it's true. And I was in the studio with Notorious B.I.G. And we were making a song called The World is Filled with Pimps and Hoes. And on that song, Puffy comes on first. And then the hook comes as Carl Thomas. Biggie comes on. And then Carl Thomas back. And now it's my turn. Now we're at the studio. Carl Thomas has already done his part. The hook was already on there. Mm-hmm. Puffy was bringing us to the session to finish the song. That night, me and Big were going to record our vocals. Puffy's verse is already on there. So he's the first verse. He pushed play. Now it's two blank verses. Biggie goes in the studio, and like that, he lays a verse that's like classic. Now everybody's laughing, smoking, and they look over at me. What you gonna do? I didn't know what to do. I'm like, I can't. Biggie didn't write his verse. He just sat around while everybody was laughing and shit and went in there and said, I'm ready. And he just goes in there and raps his verse. No pen, no paper. Wow. Some shit that him and Jay-Z and they, you know, they got all the rappers with the no pen. They started that no pen shit. So I'm sitting there with a pen and paper that I haven't written one word on. And I'm like, damn. Like, I'm in New York. My back's up against the wall. It's pressure. So I got one person with me, my homie from Oakland, my homie P. One person's with me. And I go confide in him. And I'm like, damn, he just murdered that shit. I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do? Like, what? He said, listen to the song. The song says, the world is filled with pimps and hoes. I'll just tell you about those I know. That's what the hook says. P said, neither one of them rap about a pimp or a hoe. Just do what the song says do. I wrote the verse so fast after that. I'm like, shit, all I got to do is tell you a story about a pimp and a hoe that I know. Okay. And I just easily just step into it. And there's a little bit of truth to the story I'm telling. There's a little bit of truth to the stuff I'm talking at the end. Sure. And I got it from Oakland. And the reason why I say it's a personal story, because there was some people in that story that got mad at me. It's like,
oh, really?
It's like, yeah, it's a true story.
Wow. I would say, as we have this conversation. Say it again?
I didn't name anybody's name, so that's
what. Oh, of course not. Yeah.
They're kind of mad at me.
Okay. As we have this conversation, I feel like you're giving us, and this is one thing I do love about the people from the Bay. You're giving us an anthology, if you will, of hip hop from Oakland, from the town, from the Bay Area.
I'm giving you a much smaller word than anthology. I'm giving you game.
That's it. In short.
A four syllable word.
Yeah, game. You ain't got to hit me with your big words. I know you went to school, Carrie. Nobody give a damn about your big ass words. Game, Carrie, game. Take your big words and get out of here. but it is that. And it's fascinating to me. And so I want you to describe Northern California hip hop versus Southern California hip hop. But for that matter, gangster rap versus what you did. Like, okay. There is, growing up here, there's a significant difference. Okay. I think.
Yeah, it's every city has its heartbeat in the rap music that comes from there. The hip hop that comes from Chicago has a very Chicago vibe, as does Detroit, as does Houston, as does Miami, as does Atlanta. And a lot of people outside of California listen to songs that come from Southern California rappers and songs that come from Northern California rappers, and they say, that's West Coast. And I say to them, that's an LA song. And they say, what the f*** does that mean? And I'm like,
yeah,
it's different than a Bay song. They're like, I don't know what you're talking about. West Coast is West Coast. And I'm like, well, if you're from there, you kind of know that it's different. So for one, people from outside of our side of the world, they don't get the gist of, you can get in a car and go from New York to Washington, D.C. faster than you can from L.A. to Oakland. And they don't understand that going in that car from New York to D.C., you just went through how many cities? Philly? Oh, what? Like, you went to
Philly. Yeah, probably depending. Yeah, you're right. Several. Jersey. I don't know. Go on.
So I'm saying you hit a lot of little baby cultures before you get there. And that's like, that's how far apart we are. And I don't think they, so far apart. Yeah. And it's, we like a big brother, little brother, like first cousins or something. We're related.
I was going to say distant cousins, but related. I don't know, but you're right.
I've seen people from LA touch their foot on the ground in Oakland, California for the first time and go, where am I?
Correct.
Am I in California? Like, where am
correct.
I? Like, it's
correct.
It is a culture shock that is that much different. And then, you know, looks wise, the water and the bridges, and then the hairstyles, you know, LA women are like, what you Bay Area girls doing with y'all hair? Come on now. I don't know.
No.
I'm gonna let my thing do what it do.
I was gonna say the women that I know from the Bay all have their own hair. They're very natural. They're very laid back, or that's their appearance in which they choose to give. They bad, but they just give a very, LA's a bit more, you know, a little more sceney. But when I listen, I clearly know the difference because I grew up in Southern California. But if I'm listening, I'm hearing gangster rap. Versus another type of story that you just talked about. I'm just giving you the history of where I'm from. There's a pride.
There's a lot of blue and red in there. The blue and red, you know, references of neighborhoods and gangs. There's a certain little beat. I don't necessarily want to just say the G-Funk and just say it's Death Row and Dr. Dre or anything like that. But there's a certain beat because you can hear it like in some Ice-T songs and a lot of...
Right.
A lot of Southern California rappers like King T. It was a lot of people that did that sound, DJ Quick, and you know, I love the evolution of LA rap because if you know certain little references, there's a lot of references in there that they don't sometimes boldly say, and it's a hidden language that a lot of people listen to the music and memorize the words and still don't know the true meaning of what they're saying to each other and what they're talking about when little references that are only like gang related or LA street culture related. And
like Dayton's, like, remember, everybody don't know what Dayton's are. They don't know their type of rim that when NWA would always be like cruising down the street in my 6'4", right? It's like, I feel like that's an LA thing with like rims. I know that you might've had that there, but it felt very, that beat, that familiar, like going down Crenshaw, like on a Sunday, and there was a car club.
All the three-wheel motion, all that, and talking about the lowriders. In hip-hop, L.A. rappers put the lowriders in the videos from day one. Mm-hmm. And they represented the lowriders from day one. In the Bay, lowriders with hydraulics is Mexican culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Black culture. And even though some of us have ventured over and dabbled, it's really not, it doesn't really mix. Like we meet up north, like when we go to a car show or something, the Mexicans with the lowriders, the Black dudes will be having like high performance and like different kind of old schools. Same old school love, but just fix them up different. We meet up because we all go for the booming sound system and it's the same, but we're not really into like hydraulics and stuff. And then as Northern California rappers, we respect that, but you don't see a lot of NorCal rappers like hitting switches that never.
No, it's different. It totally.
that's a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, the slang is like tremendously different.
Like the slang is worlds apart.
We use different words and we it's different. I don't know. It's just different. It's different, and it's so different that as soon as you hear a song, up to this day. So, you know, us older cats, we don't really instantly identify everything new in hip hop. It's not like instant, oh yeah, that's so-and-so, you know? So I'm not even really trying to most of the time. I wasn't even really trying to do that back in the day. I just listen to music. If I like it, I like it. I don't. But I can still to this day listen, and I'm listening. I'm like, my DJ, he's really like into everything. So he's like, he got the files on everything. He got everybody. He know every song. So he'd be playing some shit, we riding in the car, you know, out on the road doing shows or something. And I'm like, listen, I'm like, where homie from? You from LA? He's like, yep. I'm like, I can hear it. And I'm like, then another song, come on. I'm like, who's that, a new little homie? Like, yeah, he knew. I'm like, where you from the Bay? Where you at from the Bay? I can hear everything he's saying, his certain way he talks and the certain lingo he uses is from the Bay. And then the production, the way the beat sounds, we cross the line and kind of bite each other's styles from time to time, but you still can tell.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. If you pay, like, if people really gave it a chance, you could tell. So I think even on site, you use the female reference, the guy reference. I could tell a dude from the Bay versus a dude from L.A. like right away. You, how we move, how we talk, how we think, what we think is important. You know what I mean?
Bay Area male rappers are stuck on reminding you that we are not going to trick on you. They got so many ways to refer to, I ain't tricking, that we love to say we're not tricking. LA rappers always slip that little gang culture. They always throw a little reference, on hood. Like, you wouldn't even know what
on hood.
You wouldn't know what that means if you're not from the culture.
Yeah. Okay, so I asked you this because there was a debate happening. Now I get your opinion on it. Was someone left out in the Super Bowl? In the Super Bowl performance, the Ode to Hip Hop, which I thought really felt very South Central, very gangster rap-ish to me, right?
Dr. Dre's affiliates that really did good. The Game had an album that sold 5 million copies, the first one. But, you know, Game, he liked to step on toes a lot. So I don't know where him and Dre are in the love and you know, love and hip hop fan.
Do you think he should have been there? Because that's where I was going. The conversation is, where's the Game? He should have at least had one. No?
Well, you said if somebody wasn't there, who was it? I said the Game, because he had a 5-time platinum album that Dr. Dre produced. But I think that maybe Dre was just going on, I don't know, relationships. I don't know, man. I don't know where they stand. So it could have something.
And I don't want to get into relationships.
Had a little moment with a quickie with like the Dog Pound.
That's what I'm saying. Did you feel like correct? I'm saying, wait, did we miss the Dog Pound? Was Daz and Corrupt supposed to be there? Did we think the Game should have been there? Is there somebody else who was quintessential to this hip hop game that Dre has affiliations with that should have actually been there to represent LA? The most that I hear consistently is Dog Pound and the Game.
Yeah, but he
consistently.
He could have. I mean, Dre has so many classics. He could have did a whole halftime concert that was 15, 20, 30 minutes, and we would have loved it, you know? So correct. I think he dealt with it the way, with how much time he got. It was perfect. The next tier of guys that didn't make it, just look who you didn't make the cut with, you know, 50.
That's okay.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You can't feel bad.
No, the game went on I Am Athlete and said, which is another podcast that Brandon Marshall, former NFL player, has, and said he felt left out and it hurt his feelings. But you're right. Like, Dre, you know, he's at the top. He's on Mount Rushmore. So he had so many. Like, you do have to make, I'm sure that was the conversation, who won't make it. But who needs to
brought out me at E-40? That would have been cool.
I was thinking that too.
You want to start saying,
I mean, keeping a buck.
Left out. I got left out. You want to start saying
something? I mean, why are you keeping a buck? And I was like, well, is it in my mind? I was like, well, is it just Southern California? Just, but I'm like, no, because Eminem was there, right? 50 was there. So I'm all like, I don't understand.
Snoop, Ice Cube, and E-40 have a group called Mount Westmore.
So it makes sense, right?
Ice Cube and E-40 all said to Snoop, why you ain't bringing Mount Westmore to the Super Bowl?
Ice Cube, right? And I know their beef is legendary, but they're still the same, right?
Ice Cube and Dre are homies. They made a movie together called Straight Outta Compton. They're homies.
So then why wasn't he there?
I'm just saying it. It was the what he put together was a dope show. What he could have did was, it could have been a lot more, you know, but he did it good.
I enjoyed it. I had to ask you that question. I want to get your take on it. Now that's the right. It's like a top five. When you create a top five, you always got to leave somebody out. That's in sports, in our world. If you want to start an argument, you do the generic conversation of give me your top five.
Yeah, because there ain't no such thing.
Why?
Because when you start going, make me a list, you got to account for a lot of variables that coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Okay.
And from year to year, era to era, region to region, rules, regulations. It's just too many things to factor in. And then you can't tell me that, you know, like Rolling Stone keeps doing these long ass lists of like best albums, best. I'm like, who the fuck is the judge? Like, that's always the question to where does the list come from? Because this ain't my list. It's not my list. So lists irritate people.
And they make you mad because you're right. You don't count. You're like, well, what do you mean? When we say top five, or even if we say LeBron versus MJ, right? Somebody will be like, but what about this? And he had that. And they played differently, or they did this differently, or he only had this many chips. That's the answer. The answer is, how many chips do you have? That determines who's the GOAT. And I agree with you. Like, you can't, everyone's is that list will be subjective. So with that being said, I'm going to start how I began this. I'm going to pick up where I began this conversation and talking about the evolution of One Too Short.
Mm-hmm.
You have 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, 2020s, still thriving, still moving. And I asked E40 this too. What is it? You talk about the industry evolving and understanding, but as are you. Why are they just now, not even just, but if we look at you performing at Golden State Warriors game, why is it just now, right?
I think in the case of me and 40 and even, you know, guys like Snoop and Cube, we're icons now. We're no longer recording artists. And no matter how many shows we do or how many future albums we put out, icon status is locked in. It's locked in. And when you take your icons and you talk about, I mean, we can go down the list of athletes and entertainers who we gave icon status. You're in. Your latest hit no longer matters. You're my guy forever. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them don't do iconic things after they receive icon status. Like, you get your status and that's your body of work. That's it. That's how many home runs you hit. That's how many chips you won. That's how many fights you won. That's how many you're an icon. But we're the kind of icons who keep building on, keep going. I'm still doing shows. I'm still recording. You know what I'm saying? I'm not in the house sitting on a porch in a rocking chair telling stories about my first tour. Not doing that. So I think, you know, guys like us, Ice Cube is rich. He's in the studio songs, going on tour. Like, you ain't got to go on tour. He's doing it because he loves it.
Correct.
But literally, Ice Cube says, I'm having fun. We're in the middle of a show, stage, crowd out there. He's like, this is fun. So I'm just saying, to be that age, and to feel that way about your craft,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you got some guys in basketball that if they weren't coaching, they would be like miserable because they want to be a part of the game. I've heard guys say, just being commentators, like, man, I just want to be in the building. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I don't want to be away from the game. That put that same phrase in Too Short, the same word. I want to be in the building. I want to be around the game. Put that in Too Short. Put it in Oakland, California. Put it in the pimp. I just want to be in the building. You know, I want to be around the game. You know, it's the same thing. I ain't nothing but a Hall of Fame NBA player, you know?
For sure. Ballers want to be rappers. Rappers want to be ballers. It's very equivalent, right? The business is very much the same in that way.
I was an NBA player and I ended up being a head coach. This is where I'm at now. I'd be happy. I'd be happy to get out there, practice with my guys and still shoot some hoops and, you know what I mean? Feels good.
What NBA player is the equivalent of Too Short?
Anybody who played those, you know, LeBron seasons, man, those seasons. I'm not a LeBron type, you know, because he's like a hybrid human that we're probably going to find out in the future that he was the first prototype half human, half robot. Like, he just didn't tell us.
For sure.
He wanted to show us how it was. But
give me a name.
I'm trying to think.
Who's had the career that you've had? Who reminds you of you in terms of what you've been able to accomplish and what they've been able to accomplish, playing or retiring?
I would say like a Vince Carter. Like, you never have to be, You don't got to be MJ, but every time you do it, they go, ooh. And every time you hang in that rim with that elbow, you look down at everybody and say, like, and you don't have to ever walk in a room and tell people what you did, because there other people are going to talk about you. That part.
And they already know. And that, they already
I've
know.
Never seen Vince Carter brag.
Ever. He don't need to.
I brag on him. You do.
He don't need to.
Yeah. So that's my kind of guy. How many seasons did he do? 19, 20 what?
He did 20.
20. Okay. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
That's like, and could have still played again. Could have continued to play. He's like, it's just time. I'm going to do some TV now.
Yeah. So that's my kind of guy. Yeah.
I love that. What do you have going? I know you mentioned Mount Westmore. We know that's an iconic group. They can check you guys out. E40 talked about it. I love the idea of you out there still being like, it's fun. We getting it. What about music for you? What are you working on?
Well, the quarantine was a beautiful thing in terms of recording music. I recorded not only two Mount Westmore albums, I also recorded two solo albums. And as we speak, my guys in the room, two rooms over in the studio, mastering album number two. Album number one is already ready and about to be released. I'm going to drop the two albums really fast because I don't have this grand plan of spreading them out and doing it. It's like a now thing. Mount Westmore is coming out. I'm going to drop a couple albums. E40 is going to drop some stuff. We're just making that statement like, hip hop, who said I can't? Who told me I can't? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm walking out in front of like sold out arenas and I'm thinking to myself, I did this when I was 20. I was 20 years old, like 36 years ago. And I was doing the same thing. I was 14 years old. I was on a microphone rapping next to the DJ trying to rock the crowd. I'm still doing the same thing. I'm rapping on stage. The DJ's right there. The same thing 40 years later. So I'm out there looking at the crowd going, this is a blessing. Like, this is, I'm like, I had enough of this. A long time ago, I had my more than my share. And you're going to give me more? I'm like, just wow. Wow. The music sounds good. I refuse to make music that doesn't sound good, even though hip hop does have its, it does have its ageism. The older rappers don't want to give respect to the younger rappers. But at the same time, the industry, the mainstream hip hop industry doesn't want to give any play to older artists. So, so that hate is all over the place in ageism. It's cool. It's all right with me because
the nature of every business.
In your icon status, it doesn't matter what your last hit was. The phone never stops ringing. You've looking with the videos that have been going viral lately, the OG frat dudes dancing, stepping the too short, blow the whistle, you know what I'm saying? And it should go viral. It's like, your place is you're seeing.
It's solidified. It's correct. You said several things, right? That I find super inspirational. That in my mind, I'm like, okay, this. What's next? One was at the beginning. You were like, there was a dream that didn't seem realized, so you did it on your own. Mm-hmm. That in itself is a bar that anyone who's listening should think about. It didn't seem like you wanted to help it, or it was there. So I went out and got it.
Yeah, it didn't seem attainable by going and asking people for it.
Yeah. So you went out and got it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it myself then. I'm not going to ask you for it. I won't let you determine my worth or my value. I'll figure that out on my own. Then it was the true story, icon status. Like, I'm here and I'm still hustling and it is a fact. And the Vince Carter of, I don't have to brag about it. You already know about it. Mm-hmm. Someone else will tell you about it. Like that to me in itself is a beautiful thing when you look back on your career and the career you currently have and what you still, the possibilities that are endless. You, in an ageless business that tries to tell you, you can't, and you're still saying, I can. I started hustling. I'm going to figure this out no matter what. So all of that for me, whether you knew it or not, really speaks to my spirit. I appreciate you. You've given me more than enough time. And you know, I'm a huge fan. Not only, and I say this to your face, but you're a solid human. Like, you're not on any other, I'm just a good dude. I'm by myself. I roll by myself. I'm hella easy. We want to sit and talk. You want to have some lunch. Just a good human. And there are very few people who have that, especially in this business.
Thank you. Industry, that is one of the main ingredients of longevity in the entertainment industry, is the part where the people kind of miss And it's like, you got to be real. Like, they're going to let you come in here and act and pretend and, you know, love you. But when that little routine is not hot no more, it's like, see ya. Just be yourself.
And Bill Bridges, which you've done, Too Short, ladies and gentlemen, on Naked. I literally made this whole conversation about hip hop in the game of hip hop from Oakland. And you're like, I thought we were talking about, I was like, no, you gave me education today. Thank you for joining us. I know you have to go.
It's not the game, it's the anthology.
Thank you.
Bye.
I do love Too Short. Hopefully he will perform one day for me at a birthday party or a party in general. Private party though, because it's the type of music that everybody can't really be around. Maybe he'll do me a favor, hook your girl up, give me a discount. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. I really do appreciate it. And remember, please continue to talk about Brittany Griner. Please make sure that you know what's going on. You understand all sides. You understand it is extremely complicated. And whether she was right or whether she was wrong, the right thing to do is to bring her back home. Thanks for listening to Naked. I appreciate y'all.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.